In this podcast, we want to explore the role of the innovation leader as he or she begins to think within the leadership context about finding innovators in the organization or grooming innovators or the potential innovators for innovation processes within the organization. As we've mentioned many times before, the leadership of innovation is a different role from being an innovator and an inventor. The role of the leader of innovation is to be looking at innovation from its context and facilitating all of the energies and capacities and skills and structures in the organization to help it focus on becoming a truly innovative, entrepreneurial, and engaging organization. The capacity for doing that is often bound in the ability of the leader to really identify the innovators in the organization and to be able to create for them a frame or a context where they can be successful. Now, the real problem that the innovation leader is going to experience is finding that kind of talent in the organization that really represents the best in innovation and the potential for being a truly innovative participant in the organization. Most organizations do a really great job of actually smothering talent and creativity in the early stages of the individual's membership with the organization. What often happens in those set of circumstances, especially in healthcare, is that we put our young, bright, capable, and sometimes creative individuals through the orientation program. And as everyone realizes, the orientation program is designed to destroy any kind of creativity, innovation, initiative, and difference. As a matter of fact, much of orientation is designed to create the product of orientation in an image and likeness of the organization in a way that represents the organizational values at the expense of the unique characteristics of the individual. And then, after putting them through orientation, we assign them to preceptors whose role it is to do the final job and put the final nail in the coffin of individuality and creativity by making sure that that they perform, practice, behave, and act within the consistent parameters of the organizational framework. Not only do we put them with preceptors, we put them with experienced preceptors, ones that have had the broadest experience in obeying the rules, in applying the same standards, in replicating and representing to the highest level of competence the rituals and routines that are essentially the signposts of the history and the fixed structure of the organizational system. While this is a little dramatic of a description, the truth remains the same. While we may have overstated the case, what usually happens is that the creative and the innovative in the organization get wrung out of their attachment to such sentiments and feelings before they even have a chance to express them. And then when we need to have creativity and innovation and availability and openness to the drama and dramatics of change and the dynamics of transformation, it is very, very difficult for us to find anybody who is willing to engage them or even indeed represents those behaviors in their own pattern of action and relationship to the organization. In an article in the December 2008 issue of Harvard Business Review, Jeffrey Cohn, John Katzenbach, and Gus Flack discuss what organizations and companies often do to the creative and innovative in their systems. And in their research, what they usually see is that companies usually develop leaders who, in their words, replicate rather than innovate. This is no less true in healthcare. Often what we find is that we have leaders and stakeholders in the organization who are very good at doing the work of the organization, following the rules, the policies, the procedures, the standards, the practices, the rituals and routines. And as a result, we have very few people who can look at those processes and elements and structures and dynamics objectively and at a distance and begin to recognize within them the flaws and problems and issues and concerns that keep organizations and people from engaging those challenges and seeing them in a different way, putting the organization together in a way that might better emulate value contemporary issues, the change and transformation forces that are addressing the organization at the edges, and looking at the work in a way that can actually alter the framework, the purposes, and sometimes even the functional components as the need for that change gets identified by these individuals. This squelching of internal talent takes quite a toll on the organization and actually creates a great deal of difficulty with regard to the organization's ability to respond and to adapt to the changing vagaries of life. The authors of this article really suggest that there are dangers in competency modeling and competency approaches to assessing critical talent in the organization. They suggest that these leadership competency models, while they're found in almost every organization, they institutionalize the managerial and leadership behaviors and knowledge and values and motivations. And what they do is they produce steady and predictable leaders in much more predictable, routine, structured roles than what an organization often needs to remain relevant and to address its contemporary issues. What happens in these competency models is they provide a common frame of reference and a common language, a common set of standards and performance and behaviors and expectations in order to somehow address the frame or function or structure that the organization is looking for in its leadership and in its workplace. While in many ways these are ideal goals to be obtained, they really provide maybe a foundation for organizations. But what happens is that they create over-dependency, and they focus and facilitate more competitive models and hierarchical models. They build essentially a standard of sameness and of rote, instead of a much more dynamic and progressive approach to leadership and to the issues of addressing values and standards in the organization. The training and development programs for leaders built on these kind of competency-based frames teach participants really how to manage within the organization and emphasize the formal structures and frames within which this management unfolds. They really essentially exemplify and value the hierarchical and structural nature of the organization rather than the relational and interactional nature of the organization. They condition managers essentially, the authors suggest, to minimize uncertainty and to mitigate risk instead of utilizing uncertainty, maximizing the response to risk as a way of keeping the organization moving and dynamic. The leadership and management vetting process of the organization looks for candidates, actually filters for those candidates that can best exemplify the values and characteristics of the organization within its rather rote, set, and stable set of circumstances. As a result, the opportunity to play a more creative, innovative, and dynamic role in the system gets lost as one begins to emulate those values, to be recognized for those values that represent the stability and structure of the system, and reflect in one's own leadership behavior those standards and practices, rituals, and routines which best emulate the organization's own set of values. Now, here again, we have to mention that it's important for us to be able to promote and identify leaders in the organization that will, in some way, advance the interests of the organization, represent its values, and demonstrate in their own role integrity with the organization's commitment to its strategic imperatives and its work goals. While this is important, the relationship with those elements must be a horizontal rather than a vertical one, and calls leaders in those organizations to begin to ask, how can we represent those values and still make sure that we have in our leadership capacity the dynamics and availability to the vagaries of transformation and change dancing at the edges of our organization, being driven by the external environment and the relationship between the internal organization and the external realities, and the leader's ability to predict and to adapt to those transformations and adjust the organizational activities and imperatives in a way that is creative, innovative, and responds well to the demand for change. So along with Cohn, Katzenbach, and Black, in their article and belief, how can we begin to start looking for healthcare innovators in our own organizations so that we are able to identify and we're able to groom and build effective leaders of innovation in our organizations who are well-placed and competent within their capacity for innovation to lead an organization and to help continue the dynamics of transforming it. First thing, it's important for us to begin to identify what are the characteristics of innovators? What are we looking for when we're looking to determine who are the innovation personalities in our organization? And when we're recruiting or interviewing or determining management leadership, what should we be looking for if we're looking to value and to find innovators in our organization? First, the best innovators are those that have very well-developed, strongly competent cognitive abilities, those that have excellent observational and analytical skills. These are the people who can zero in on very important issues and values, points, people who are able to kind of hone their insight, look past the extraneous and peripheral, and really get to the very core or central issues. They are able to handle great deals of quantity of data and be able to sort through the extraneous and non-relevant and find the critical and important elements of that data, and to be able to assess the effectiveness and quality of that data and determine what the data is really saying that will have an impact on their role, their work, their life. They're able to isolate those kinds of things in the organization that don't necessarily reflect what's really going on, and are able to focus on those things that really exemplify what is of value and importance in the whole process of the work in the organization and the organization's response to its demands or its customers or patients. Once they have been able to isolate all of these factors, they can do a quick assessment and see how the pieces might fit together as a whole. So one of the things that people can, innovation people can do with data is not only look at the data, but look at the relationship of the data to other pieces of data and begin to link it together in a way that asks the question, how does it fit? What story does it tell? What statement does it make? What ideas does it generate? What does it inform me with regard to what it is I need to know? As a result, these people can translate their assessment and their ability to analyze into a more strategically directed mechanism of mind that says, what do we do, where do we go, what happens as a result of what we see with regard to the data or the objective observations that we're making. Second, the attribute that these potential leaders have is that these leaders are not content to remain where they are, and even to remain in a place that is relatively successful if there is something better that can result from different decision-making and action-taking. So these leaders don't rest on their laurels, the author suggests. What these leaders do is they recognize where they are. They recognize what needs to happen as a result. They don't just say because something has always worked, it will need to continue to work and we'll need to keep it. They never have the attitude that simply says, this is the way we've done it, it's worked, therefore why would we change it? Their assessment is, just because it's worked doesn't mean that it needs to keep working or that it can't work better if we find better ways of doing it. There's a certain underlying insecurity in them not to rely on past accomplishments or success or things that work in the past. They really kind of want to be able to see what kind of adaptation and change and adjustment might need to occur to confront contemporary issues, or to be prepared for future demands for change and for adjustment in practice and in behavior. These high-performance innovation leaders can really kind of reframe current practices and even emerging challenges from a vantage point that has multiple insights and multiple trajectories, so that they're actually able to look at issues and concerns from the perspective of which solutions might be best embraced and best represent the right choice in the organization, and might influence other individuals to engage them and to address them. Now, this is counter to what most organizations do with regard to success. We often get inured by our successes and resonate with them, and inside of those successes begin to see our role and our relationship. And sometimes we get even ego-bound by our successes in such a way that we think those successes define ourselves. When the truth is, the innovator is never satisfied with current success, doesn't get caught up with the successes they've had, doesn't identify themselves with past successes, actually identifies themselves with future successes and the activities and adjustments necessary to make those future successes. Now, this is a big challenge for existing leaders, because you have an innovation leader potential in the organization who can't simply be satisfied with current activities and the successes related to those, and sees themselves more and more having to identify their own role and characteristics within the potential of the future decisions and actions and changes in the organization, rather than anything having to do with how we got here. Now, a part of the challenge for the leader of these kinds of individuals and the person who may mentor and develop them is to be able to balance the two, the foundations upon which decisions have been laid and actions have been taken, and the value of those firm foundations, but as a stepping stone to engage ways in which enhancements can occur, transformations can occur, new ideas can emerge, and new processes that may take the organization to places it needs to go as the environment changes can be identified and built upon. Now, another consideration for the potential innovation leader is the recognition that innovation leaders are very, very aware of what's going on around them at all times. They have the ability to look at all the constituents surrounding an issue, sort through them, and are able to really discern the underlying characteristics, conditions, circumstances, and motivators for almost any factor. This ability to kind of read the room, or read the circumstances, or read the surroundings, is a skill that helps them hone down what is in the environment and in the circumstances, and to be able to really look at those objectively and gather from them what is absolutely essential to making a decision and to undertaking action. Now, for some, this is a developmental gift, the ability to read the room or read the circumstances, and can grow with maturation and with development. But they have a pre-existing ability to really kind of take a look and scope out, if you will, all of the elements or factors or circumstances, and to be able to kind of make some judgments about what it is they see as a way of informing decisions and informing action. There's a high level of social intuition, savvy, and even tenacity with regard to what it is they discern from their assessments and observations around them. Innovators are also persuasive, and often you'll find them endearing and skilled at relationship building, very disarming, very charming, very very relational in their orientation. They really know how to extract information and insights and get what it is they need from individuals, from particular places in an organization or in a system. They're able to garner what they need to know, what they need to get in order to be able to address their particular needs. And they're often able to disarm whatever barriers or boundaries might be in the way working past them in an effective way that doesn't alienate or in some ways disenfranchise those that are necessary to them as they gather what they need to be able to make the decisions they need or take the actions that they need to say. Real successful innovators are able to really persuade others to share insights and knowledge and resources in a way that can help them best converge all of that information and make some decisions about it. They are also extremely curious about what others are doing and what others are thinking, and they're kind of shopping, if you will, for new kinds of ideas or new notions or new processes, yet in a way that doesn't appear to be intrusive or interruptive or destructive in any way. They have an ability essentially to articulate ideas, to excite others with regard to those ideas, essentially to sell ideas and notions to others in a way that is engaging and endearing. Now, another capacity that the potential innovation leader has is to balance that tension between the independent mind and creative and innovative and entrepreneurial energy they have with their ability to be socially involved and engaged with others. This tension often operates in different parallels, but converges in this individual and calls this individual to really kind of dance between the two and to help manage their access of resources and then recombine that access and those resources or ideas or notions in a way that is unfamiliar to the current status of the organization and therefore must sell and engage others in them because of their personality disposition. They're often able to connect to these two rather diverse energies and to move between the conventional boundaries and the safety of existing positions and then move themselves and others to engage those things that might be innovative and creative and to do so in a way that can actually excite the stakeholders and taking their kind of unusual psychological mix, helping to converge the resources and people around the potential for these ideas in a way that can be positive and stimulating and energizing. Now, finding these innovators in your organization is sometimes very difficult. Often they are buried beneath regular jobs and embedded deeply in the job routines, and sometimes they have lost touch with their innovative characteristics, or they've focused those energies on other activities into either excellence in work or factors relate to their building relationships at the point of service with regard to their work. And so sometimes you have to dig past all of that in order to be able to find these individuals. It will take you as leaders to have some discipline, really good data, really good talent management skills and processes embedded in the leadership development of your current leaders so that you can kind of engage them as partners in looking for these individuals that represent this unique, innovative leadership talent. And finding that in the organization sometimes will be a little bit challenging. So you're spotting for the potential based on what we've already discussed. And so you need to determine what it will take to touch base with that individual that actually has the innovator spark in the organization. And a part of it is getting some sense through your conversations, through your interviews, through your relationships with people that may simply exemplify some of the talents that we've just talked about, and getting some intentionally focused data with regard to who these individuals are. Sometimes what you're also trying to do is identify through real-world scenarios or stories or processes in your conversations with these potential innovators to see how they approach those stories or those contexts or scenarios that you may be devising in a way that stimulates some different ways of thinking and different ideas about how they respond to those processes. Being really clear about your intentional focus on trying to discern who these players are and what it will take to find them is important in terms of your intentionality as a leader. Now remember, the process just doesn't stop with identifying and seeing the potential in these kinds of people in terms of how they approach a scenario or reach a decision about a scenario or articulate a clear and compelling rationale for the trade-offs that might have been presented in that scenario. What you're really looking for is pursuing them by providing additional information and additional opportunities for them to give ideas and to evaluate the potential impact those ideas have on the scenario or the organization. A part of what you're looking for is to see if this individual can turn a critical eye inward and change positions when you give new evidence or new elements to the scenario, and can go with those changed circumstances to begin to see things differently and to create different mental models that represent the change in the circumstance. What you're trying to do is sort out that individual from those who hold tightly to existing models or past beliefs or historic trajectories. The true innovator will never let attachment or commitment to previous processes or even personal pride or successes or any of those kinds of things get in the way of a different way of seeing things, of the potential for a better solution, for a different process, for an innovative dynamic, regardless of where it came from and what it's a part of. And you can begin to see that as you expand the information in the scenario, create some challenges, and they come back with some different insights and information with regard to how it might be approached. In addition, because potential innovators have strong emotional intelligence, they will seek feedback, they will seek clarification, they will seek some insight with regard to what they're projecting, what they're seeing, what they're suggesting, and see that as a relational kind of horizontal interaction, as a part of their commitment to their own clarification with regard to what's relevant and what might work. Now, during these discernment processes, this kind of intentional interviewing, what you're really trying to look at is to clearly and convincingly defend a decision and to sell a point of view on the part of the innovator. Now, if you're finding that the innovator can't argue a case in a kind of a one-to-one relationship with the absence of any other kinds of support in either infrastructure, individuals, or teams, it's really unlikely that that innovator will have the sufficient moxie or salesmanship necessary to really push an idea or generate other people's interest in that idea or excite people with regard to the implications of the idea in a way that can really get the kind of engagement that innovators generally need in order to be successful. Remember, one of the things that we're trying to represent here in the look at the innovator and the pursuit of potential innovators is that innovation is not a unilateral journey. Innovation demands collective activity and energy and wisdom. And the truly gifted innovator is the one who can engage the collective wisdom and be able to energize others and in some ways get them on board and invested and involved in making the innovation work and helping facilitate its success. Now, once you've identified and kind of engaged the potential innovator, you really got to give them an opportunity to really stretch and experience in real time what's possible for them in terms of their innovation. What you do as a leader is you give the innovator a real project and then assess what's going on with regard to the project and the gifts and challenges that the leader or the innovator might be confronting from your leadership perspective. What you're really trying to do is find a project or a process or a safe experience as you're beginning to expand your insight about the innovator in the organization and allow them some wiggle room and movement to provide leadership in that innovation project and to see what emerges, what kinds of processes emerge, what kind of challenges they confront, what kinds of ways in which they put together stakeholders and others to engage their process, how they're able to actually translate it into a doable, into a potential, into something that becomes real for them, so that all of this becomes a vehicle for them to exemplify and demonstrate the potential they have. Now, of course, because you are now growing the potential behaviors of an innovator into a real innovator, some skills are going to be more highly developed than others. And as a leader, you're looking to see which are those skills, or the potentials there for all of the skills. Are some more highly developed than others, and which skills would need mentoring and support and additional guidance in order to help the leader develop in a way that's meaningful and valuable for them? Now, as well as doing that, you want to encourage and create mentoring and peer opportunities for these individuals so that they have the tools and support and skills necessary to be successful in what they're doing. Remember, what the mentor does is equip the rising innovator with the right kinds of tool sets, the right kinds of data and information and learning about the people and the processes and the dynamics they're most likely going to encounter in their interactions and in the process of innovation. Remember, what you do as a mentor is that you're constantly encouraging the innovator, developing that innovator, helping them refine the skill sets they need to be successful as an innovator, and then help them build the skill sets in a composite kind of synthesis so that they actually become very skilled and competent and capable, so that what they can do is be successful innovators and actually be able to help the organization translate that into success for the organization as a system. Remember, innovators are encouraged to turn and develop and grow their peer groups, their peer relationships, their interactions with others, and they have pre-existing skills to be able to do this. These skills simply need to be disciplined in a way that will help advance them in their role as innovator in working with others, getting stakeholders, helping those stakeholders develop and contribute their particular gifts and skills, and then advancing the innovation process in a way that's meaningful and successful for the organization. Now, finally, what I want to suggest is that as an innovation leader, you're trying to develop innovators as a way of being, as a way of life for them. You're constantly going to have to be aware and available of the unique characteristic of the innovator and of the challenges with regard to their goodness of fit. As you can clearly see in what we've talked about today and some of the previous podcasts on innovation, that the innovation person isn't the run-of-the-mill or routine or compliant kind of individual. And now that you're actually generating the capacity for innovation and stimulating the innovator, that becomes even more critically evident in the organization, not only to you, but to peers and to other people. And so you're constantly going to have to be available and mentoring and recognizing the innovator within a context of a career rather than just simply a role or a situation. Once you begin to develop and refine the innovation skills and create the innovator in the organization and position them and place them and relate them to others and give them opportunities to really exercise their talents and their skills, you're going to have to be there for them as they develop their innovation capacity as a career, as a skill set, as a way of being, as a way of life. And then supporting them as they confront the vagaries of the organization that are often not necessarily configured in a way that helps them or facilitates them or supports their unique characteristics. So being there for them as a way of life for you as a leader and for them as an innovator is going to be a very important part of your relationship with them and their relationship with the organization. You as the innovation leader creates essentially a career plan or an ascension plan, ascension meaning a growth plan for this individual to help them continually address their own growth needs and to fit in the organization with their unique skills and talents and behaviors intact. That's often going to be emotionally and relationally challenging for you, just as it is for the innovation individual, the innovator themselves. And so a part of what you're doing is you're beginning to identify and grow and mature and position the innovator, is be present to them as a leader to help them be continually successful in an organization that will always continually tend to want to be stable and want to be ritualistic and want to value the routine and want to rest on its laurels and its past successes. As an innovation leader, you're constantly going to be fighting with those issues and those conflicts and those vagaries in the organization. And the innovator who represents the absolute opposite of those is going to need from you a continual expectation of career support, development, encouragement, and relationship. Now, I recognize that these are just some of the processes associated with identifying and characterizing the innovator in the organization and making it possible for them to be found and to begin to be successful. We've just scratched the surface. We'll be continually having conversations and doing podcasts around the innovator, the role of the innovator, and the innovation process in the organization as a way of building a broad range of insights and a real capacity for true innovation leadership.